Time One Right, and this is Business Session with Wade this Saturday morning, the 6th of July, 74. A Business Session with Wade, this Channel One Right, and the beginning of a continuation, really, from another reel. This Business Session with Wade this Saturday morning, 6th of July, 74. Time One Right, and this is a part of the Business Session with Wade. This Saturday morning, the 6th of July, 74. John One Wright, and this is a part of the last part of the Business Session with Wade. This Saturday morning, the 6th of July, 74.
He is the last of his kind.
Okay,
Edwards.
You know him or spoken to him? Or I don't know in your background. Okay.
Well, I'll tell you. Yeah, I've been to Sunday school with him. I've seen him in a lot of. You see, his daddy was one of the wealthy men, but he was just a common fellow, his daddy was. Well, L.K. went to school, but L.K. never left his background. He never left it. And you see, he was a legislator, senator, state senator there for a number of years, and he's in these banks at Ocala, and he still got most of the land that his daddy owns and all. And they had that big crate mill out there. You see, his daddy was the center of the whole territory there. The first job they had, a lot of them, was at old man Edwards' crate factory. That's the first place Willie Chitty ever worked, outside of the cotton patch. L.K. Underwrites the church. He teaches the Sunday school class.
Still.
He directs the choir. Stands up there and directs it, and right behind the pulpit, and he can preach as good as a preacher. And he's a speaker of Toastmaster. He's got a light touch in that. He underwrites this Lions Club auction, you see. He's the principal one that does that. The others take a little hand in it, but LK sort of keeps it going. He puts in this stained glass window back of the pulpit in the church down there. That's a sort of memorial to the Edwards clan. But now, see, he's got no way of preserving a picture of what he is like and what he does. Now, historically, he deserves a picture.
I think.
And then, just for his own purposes, you see, with as much of his time as you know, as a public figure, he would. Do a picture. And how you going to picture him? Well,
through his daughter, maybe.
Through his reputation. His reputation lives after. His reputation won't live after.
No.
There's not anybody, once he's gone and you don't see him, there's nobody who can tell you what he did and what took place. They don't have the gift for it.
I know his daughter and seen his son one time. It's like a guy, you talk about the end of an institution. That's it. That is the last of a line.
Yeah.
Those people have no relationship to what he was.
No.
His daughter's profession, just to give you an absolute thumbnail sketch, is living in New York City. That is her occupation. And coming home to see friends in Gainesville.
But he used to take his boarding school. He got the chauffeur to take him in a Cadillac.
Well, he looks it. I saw him one time, and I swear to God, I thought the mafia had walked in. I mean, he's well under 30, I'm sure. He walked in just trailing dollar bills. Maybe $100 bills, I don't know.
Yeah, $100 bills.
He just walked in. It was amazing.
Well,
Guy, that's damn tempting. Like, I mean, there's so much of that, that there's that one man, and I've known it. You didn't even have to, I mean, you can point it out to me, but I've heard about it, and I've heard a couple of stories about people around this area.
Yeah.
And they don't, it's a different world from the big money in, say, Northeast, or it's a certain type of a heritage. It's like that, I don't know who it was, the pork chop man that had the crate mill. That might have been L.K. Edwards. I don't believe so. This man was in the McIntosh area, so I don't think it was Edwards. But Harry Wood was telling me about that one, that he actually was jolly and a politician. And when his crepe mill burned down over there, he took it as a political occasion. And he went around introducing himself and shaking hands and smoking a cigar and saying, "Let her burn." And he was looked like such a pork chopper one time they actually put him in a pig truck and run him around town when he was doing his political running. I mean, there are just a bunch of them around. I don't think that was L.K. Edwards, but I mean, just such things as that. And it's marvelous. I mean, land baron, and I think that second generation with a bit of education has a lot to do with it. See, they don't have a whole lot of heritage behind them. And they got a lot of roughness. And they come up there, and then the kids, they can't hold the line. They're gone.
They're gone.
They won't hold that together.
Oh, no. Well, now, that's the thing I see.
Well, I've got to get finding some people. I don't know where you can get. This guy we got over the phone, I'm a little flat on that.
Like that. At least we got somebody.
But I mean, just you almost figure he's dead if he had 7 years with a newspaper and he's trying to go back to get a degree in something.
He's written a book.
There's a kid in Micanopy now, kid. He's 30 something. He's lo and behold, he writes. But God, I mean, he's way too flappy, frazzle minded, from what I've seen of him. He walks around in the fog a lot of times, seems like. And you say, damn, nation, you know, here he is spending energy on writing. Why can't he wake up and do it decently? He's creative.
Let me tell you, they don't know how. Well, now, let me tell you, Wade, it's sad. Now, this little tadpole has just dropped in here. He started out in journalism, but he left it because he couldn't see the steps up. And for the simple reason, you see, that he can't see the journalism, and he doesn't. He was in journalism and proposed to write the stuff. He doesn't even have a typewriter.
You can get a typewriter; it works fine for $15. I bought one. Type like hell on it.
Right. Well, now you see that's that's what this goes into.
You know what? I'm running into a bunch of different people now, Guy. A whole new set through this Orlando business.
Yeah.
And these are people into their 30s. That are experiencing what they call technically job dissatisfaction. They're unhappy with their way of life. And.
Do you want some water or a cup of coffee?
No, thank you. And a couple of them, like this David Flagg character, have got a good mentality. And the nice thing about it, it seems to be a little open ended.
Your business man?
Yeah. I don't see them having such a tight, opinionated attitude as some of these other youngsters we talk about. Like the
How
creative...
Old is he?
He'd be 34, 35.
Is that all?
Right.
He'd done all that in that time.
Oh, yeah. You see, he would be friends with L.K. Edwards' kids.
Yeah.
If not friends, he'll know them.
Oh, I see.
And he knows how they react to money. He categorizes these people in town according to the way they deal with money.
Oh, does he? Well, now, do you think he could understand what I'm telling you?
I'm just saying it's a higher probability that he would handle it well than it would be for some of these younger people, and especially the opinionated ones.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to get at is that somehow or other, this bunch of people, I've only started meeting a couple of them, but they've been successful, and they've gone through this job bit, hard work, I mean, not menial jobs, but responsible positions. And they know they want to change. They're not sure what direction the change goes, and they're not after simple dropping out, as the saying goes, that is, doing nothing or going back to the land. They're intelligent enough to know that that's ridiculous. It's impossible. What I'm saying is probability, if we could approach some of these people right, that they may... See, I think they have this basic ability, some of them. You've seen a lot of people with the basic ability to do it. And the point is to gain an interest long enough for them to get a feel for it and then see their product and see the worthfulness of it. Because it's damned exciting if you ever once put that together.
Yeah.
And that's what they're after, is this interest in life.
Yeah.
There's a girl came up last night. She's 38. And she's one of these executive secretary type things, and she very quietly is going about shifting her gears in her life.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't say a whole lot about it, and seems like a level head. And it just occurred, I don't know what she can damn sure type. She's a secretary. Who knows? Somebody, and I've talked to her just about an hour or so, enough to know that, and I've watched her comment on her other friend, Carol, which is the one I know from that area, who's Neil's friend, and her mind works. Nothing's foggy about her mind.
Yeah.
And she's down to earth. She doesn't stay in these damned intellectual circles.
Let me tell you, Wayne.
I'm just searching around. I don't know.
You see, I've gone about as far as I can without somebody behind me. Now, you see, I don't care who it is. If I had the institution with intelligent people, the use of it with Neil's, there'd be somebody there that could help me. Almost any institution. Now, you see, what I need first of all is to make contact with an editor. Well, I don't think it'd be any problem for them.
Guy, that's they're here right now. This girl, this week or next week, is going to be on the lead cover story of the Today newspaper, which is a weekly newspaper. It's a strange one. Comes out of over at the missile shooting area. She's being the cover picture. They're all involved in this media business, written and TV. They know all the people. Another thing, these people are always hunting for material. The only danger there is you need to control the way it goes out enough so that it can won't be, get killed on the first exposure.
Yeah.
I'd say right now there's no problem in eventuality of exposing something like this. The big problem being is that you don't just, because it could bomb. God almighty, guy.
You'd want to put on a half a dozen issues of it and see what they say.
Well, at least get it out so that in a manner that people could get a feeling for it and would like some more or something of this nature. I don't know, because it could be... I'd hate to see the wrong people get a hold of it.
Yeah. Well, anybody like that, you see, can get a hearing, you see, with an editor. Now, I need the people to work with, and if they can do anything, they can round up any sort of talent. That's the one thing they can do. And furthermore, they can screen them.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, the boy, the way he treats you and me when he talks to us over the phone, he's screening us. He starts asking me the questions. Is what is it you want done down there, and how much are you going to pay? He's not entitled to ask that. He's the one on the line, and he's supposed to put his credentials on the line and let me tell him what I can do. Well, you see, he wouldn't go down there and do that. That's where you a fairly large organization. For one thing, he wouldn't get to anybody till they found out about him. You see, one secretary after another could handle him until they got what they wanted, and then they could tell him what to me. See, all I want to do is look at some of the things he's done, see if there's any signs at all. I said to say, your case like that, I said, now, you see, this came up, first time this came up was with Van Arnum. I'd been looking for one of the cars to save gasoline, and I got into that salesman's hands, and he said, now, there's some of those cars right over there. But he says, now this is the one where you make the saving money. So he showed me a Corvette or a Chevrolet or something like that, see. It's a beautiful car. But he raised the hood and you couldn't see the motor. Well,
that was the believer in the ever spiraling economy.
That's right. In spite of, not in the energy crisis, he says, not in the shortage of energy. Now that I told Carl that, and he kind of got up there about it. He says, you know what irritates me is, he had a name for it, is this attitude on the part of a salesman or any organization. They'll just walk right through any conditions as if it didn't exist. I wish I could remember what he called it. Well, not long after that, I was having so much trouble reading my glasses, and I asked him if he wouldn't just give me a pair of reading glasses. And I was down there, and I got down there early, and he was late and going out to lunch. So I hollered at him, and I went along with him. Well, he went over to Wise's drugstore, sat the counter there, and ate that rice with chicken soup. They all talked to him while he did it, you see. He came back by a number of places. One was sort of a Barney-looking place, a big black fella leaning back in the chair there, and he hollered at him. The man just jumped up and come right out there in a hurry. Yes, sir, boss. And that same old attitude, you see. Well, what he does is manicure cars. He cleans them out, he washes them, he polishes the wheels and waxes them and just gets them up to see where they look like new or better with not much money, really. And Carl said to me, he says, you know, there's so few things you can buy with money than that. Now, if you can buy this sort of service, you better do it. And what he wanted to do was fix up his Florence's car to have it ready for her as a kind of surprise. But she'd been off on a trip. And that's the back of my mind, too, when I was talking to him over there. I said, hell, Carl, a man who finds out as many things as you do and has so many experiences. And I say, now, hell, all these writers and journalists and people like that, they don't know these things, you know. They may sound like they know a lot, but look at all these things. And you see, people in his position, people just they're waiting to talk to him and tell him everything when he restores their sight. Yes, I'd tell him a few things, too, if he wanted to know. Well, I said, hell, you could put a, you could get one of these young people that need training, and they could follow, they go with you on your rounds for an hour or two, and then you could report to them for an hour or so every now and then. And they know how to set it down. They know, they'd find out how to set it down. That's the same thing we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you'd really have something rich. Your children and grandchildren would know you better than anybody else that I know of. And all it would cost you is the upkeep, say $300 or $400 a month. That got him.
No. He was ready to.
If I wanted to train somebody and let him practice on him, he's willing.
You have stopped preaching and gone to meddling on that case.
Right. Well, LK, I don't think LK would flinch like that. I think he's used to shelling out the money. He got a whole lot more of it than Tom.
Oh, yeah. Well, God, support that daughter is amazing.
Yeah.
She doesn't do one damn thing, guy. Can you imagine living a life like that?
Yeah.
Not the first damn thing except occupation living in New York.
Well, now you see it. You see what you've got there. The thing of it is, you couldn't do this like Dale Carnegie, because the flatheads have to be a little too far along for that. Almost anyone can learn from Dale Carnegie. And I mean really learn. I mean there's something there to learn. Even his public speaking, there's more to learn from him than there is from this damn stuff they pass off on people up here. But for this, you see, you've got to be able to abstract it and project. And not many people reach that point. And on top of that, you see, they've got to be pretty facile with the language and be able to look at it at the typewriter. It wouldn't be a mass movement.
No, I don't think you're going to have to put a toll gate out here.
You see, what happens is, you see these little things as they come along. Well, you'll find out something that go into, as they say, that you could package. You'd find it.
Oh, I have no doubt. Hell, if you had four people out here in a year's time, you could put out a fine book, more than likely.
Yeah.
And they could collaborate on the damn thing.
That's right. Well, now, you've got this one thing. You'd say, well, where's your outlet? If you write something on him, where's your outlet? Well, you can't answer all those things at one time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say in his case, he published the book himself.
More than nothing.
And also, he'd get a good publisher to do it.
Guy, if it was ever put together right, anything like that, if you want to be serious about outlets, what you got going here could be put together, and you could get publicity on it. I mean, through like these, well, that Phil Donahue. That's just about all he ever does is interview people with books, of one description or the other. That's about it. And every time I haven't written them down. There's some book on growing your own vegetables or shopping at the supermarket,
yeah.
Things like this nature. And hell, I say to myself, you know, I'd really like to get that book. Of course, I hadn't done it, but I'd like to get that shopping at supermarket book. But, you know, such things as that kind of exposure could just simply get things moving right along. You don't know. Now, it's a good time to be doing this thing. Times are right for it.
Yeah. Well,
it's not 10 years ago, wouldn't be as receptive. People's attitudes have changed a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes. You've got the people on the outskirts, what they call
see, this is the opposite polarity of Watergate, what you're talking about now. I don't mean all the talking so much about Watergate, but that's that world up there, PR men and hustling and fast moving and big talking, and that's tiresome.
Yeah.
People don't, I mean, they like to get away from that, back down to some other realities.
Yeah. Your limitations, you see, it's very hard to see the limitation of an institution. Now, this little boy down here is a perfect case of it. He came up here, and he got here just at supper time, so he sat there and ate a minute. Ate. And I didn't have anything to talk to him about. He came over there to go farm, but you never would believe the things that would happen. And so he just went into his intellectual history. I just asked him what he'd done. Well, he started out in journalism, he said. And then he gave the ins and outs of journalism. He started in journalism. His mother's a school teacher, so he gets he's ahead of most people, most of the young people. And his father's apparently a businessman. And then he got into psychology for a reason, you see. Now, here's the one thing about psychology. People go into psychology to see how the mind works. But see, actually, the psychologists really are not interested in the mind. They're more interested in what the emotions do to you. So those compulsions are what you learn about. So you really, when you, if you ever come to, and you wonder why in the hell you got into a branch of a study like that. That's something. Well, so. But you see, it takes a long time, and he can't do it, to cut through the institution, to see what it does.
He can't see the steps out here. Like, that's a really important thing that you... I mean, they aren't there right now. You can't promise him a promotion next year.
That's right. He got to see.
And no degree, guys.
Now you know what he's going into now? He's going into something now where he uses his hands. He's going to study nursing. And then he'll use nursing to make a little money so eventually he can get into medicine.
Hmm.
But he got this notion of using his hands, just like the crafts. That's something that's fetish, isn't it?
It's it's quite in group now.
Well, they ought to use hands, but they don't have to do it as religion. Just do it as an everyday thing.
I don't know why these people never read Eric Hoffer.
Yeah.
None of them have that attitude.
No, they don't read anything straight.
Well, it's just that, you know. Like, he did that. He did manual work, but it was to allow him to work his head.
Yeah.
And he didn't leave his head at home when he went to work.
Yeah.
Now, all these guys leave their goddamn head at home.
Yeah.
If they ever pick it up.
Yes, they ever do.
You know, you're talking to me about being clear-headed and everything, and I mean, I know what it... I've had my head screwed up, so I know what being clear-headed is.
Yeah.
And it's a real righteous thing. But you can also just be, I mean, some of these guys just completely don't even use it at all, the troops I know of. That's something. Now, Hoffer, he took that bone to work with him. He'd pick it up and take a bone to work. Most of these guys don't do it.
Well, see, this fella, I didn't realize he's that young.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'm confident he's younger than I am. See, there's a whole group of those people, early 30s, some of them under 30, that have made vast amounts of money. Generally, they came into it with with their steak. You see, that's what put a lot of these guys ahead. They didn't have to get a grub steak. And they came in at an opportune time, and they just took that steak and turned it over 5 or 10 times. Now, hell, 2 or 3 of them dropped, that's a group that dropped $1 million in Germany, remember, on that Kentucky Fried. Well, that's a lot of damn cash, guy. They're not dead.
Still buy a little.
Sure. They didn't drop all their money. They damn sure dropped $1 million. Hey, Faye.
Well, that's
and that,
it.
And well, part, you know, one of the group is Henry's Liquors, Henry's son. That from, they're all from this area around here. They're a lot of local people. I don't know what LK's son's doing. I only saw him that one time. I have no idea. He went over in a corner and talked to a friend. Not that he would have talked to me or that I wanted to talk to him. He looked like he was dealing mafia almost. So I don't know whether he's a part of that group or not. But it's, they're not old people. And they're the ones that are pushing money around now.
Well, now you see, what I was told you, I just realized, so it took me so long. It always takes me a long time to see anything. I have to work at it. That you've got a good bit going over there. And that it's right promising, one thing I didn't see this right at first, but you don't have any writers, and then you don't know what writers to get. Well, if I. That would be more of attraction for the young people to live over there than it would over here.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would be more attractive to me too, because they wouldn't be. I wouldn't have them underfoot.
Mm. You could tolerate them more.
Oh yeah, and I don't need to see them much. Mm-hmm. They need to sort of get around and screw around with each other. That's. I think that's.
You don't need a couple of hours to kick ass.
That's right. That's right. I don't even really need that much. That's right. Give them something real. If they'll take it. Well, but you see, I tried to go through the institution up there to get mm-hmm. get a writer or two even to come out here, and I didn't even get a postcard from them. You see, they just paid no attention to me. I might keep after them, you see, and they might send me a couple of broken down ones, sort of plow horse type of thing. But they never would refer anyone to me who was promising. They'd keep their time down up there. Well, you see, so I'm sort of on the outside, just sort of looking around at the outskirts to see if anybody is attract anybody,
mm-hmm.
just accidentally.
And I could put an ad up there saying, wanted photographer to work in business or apprenticeship and job opportunity. And if anybody came down, I wouldn't even put the ad up, because I know who'd come down. They'd want a full salary, or they'd want the instructions with no commitment. They wouldn't care about doing the work. They wouldn't want to sweep the floor. Not the first goddamn one of them, guy, would sweep the floor. You know, and they want everything that's laid out. And I'll be damned, if they stick it out and get their master's degree, it looks like some fool turns around and hires them. And pays them a fat salary for nothing.
Mm-hmm. And they don't know anything.
They're considering Ted for job photographing historical monuments or buildings or something in Georgia. And why? Because he got a master's degree.
That's right.
Well, Christ, he can hardly take a correct exposure. Not considering where his head's at, I'm talking on technical levels now. So it's just, It's just occurred to me in the last few weeks that I've stepped in an alternate institution, finding people that might work, and by God, I believe they're going to be older.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, in the 30s type people. Because, see, they've spun out their ideals, whatever they are. I don't give a damn, you know. They're all the same thing, whether you're going to work for the National Biscuit Company or you're going to be a big creative writer or what. You know, you've got to spin through that for a while. And then you wake up and say, well, now, wait a minute. Maybe that's what it was all about. And most of the people we run into, just they're really single-minded people, the institution people. They just one track right down the road. They're not going to stop and look around.
No. They tell you they can't afford to.
Mm-mm. They're either hidebound to write that ultimate poem or make the finest painting in the world, and you know, I'll be damned if any of them slow down long enough to learn what they're doing.
And they get into an institution of some sort, and the group kind of covers them up.
Oh, it's totally sickening. It waters it down and makes my world weaker, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
There's no strength in what these people do. The art world, I can keep my eye on a little bit, and it's weak, really weak. There's no solidity involved in it. And I presume that most of the writing world is about the same way, or any of these other productive worlds, it seems like, when they get to doing this, covering each other up. Writing has a better chance than this bloody art world, because it's a more independent operation. You can sneak out a good piece of writing every now and then. It gets to the front.
Yeah.
And you can see something solid going on. Well, like Studs Terkel. I don't know if that will bear. It's too big a book to handle all totally. Unless you just make a few comments on it. It's a general thing. But it's marvelous. He's a respectful
now,
person.
Now, what did I see? Some magazine sections of that in the
magazine? I brought you two excerpts. Two
yeah.
men. There was a fireman and
yes, something else. Yes.
And this book has 100...
Yeah.
Bloody interviews in it.
Yeah.
And I just read the first little section because I just got into it yesterday. And one of them's on a stonemason. And that's fine. That's really fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it sort of relates to around here a little bit. And he's got three interviews with newsboys, two 12-year-old boys and a 14-year-old boy. And the 14-year-old boy just comes across in great shape. They're all good. But, it's really nice. And he talks in his introduction about how he used a tape recorder and how it was an intrusive machine. And it's all tape. The whole damn thing's tape. It's the closest thing to what you started out with that's ever been published. But intent didn't talk. You know, he's got a direction. It's working. The job. That's his intention, and he holds to it. And he doesn't get off of that at all. So his subject, content, content is work. So it doesn't have to do with that thing called talk at all.
Yeah.
But it's, and the idea of the use of the tape and then the transcription of the tape. A direct transcription. He doesn't delete anything. he's a little rough when he puts in sometimes when you ask a question. It almost jars you whenever you ask a question. Because he'll have a paragraph down there and then he'll italicize the question in the middle and then start another paragraph. It's just a feeling I got from reading it that's a little bit of a jerk when you get in that. I mean, and his question is not speech almost. It comes out somewhat written. And of course, he records everything. See, well, maybe I know the difference. It's like when you see in your interview technique, you pat around a little bit.
Mine loose.
you just mumble around and you say, well, you know, what, you're doing this with him. And he gives him a strong boot to the rear.
And they give it back to him.
Yeah. Well, he's too intentional on it. It's admirable what he did. Absolutely admirable. I'm not trying to tear him down. It's just that smoothness, that flow is broken up by that kind of interview technique. I don't know whether this girl Carol is going to ever understand that or not, but she runs that talk show interview. And I found out that the public likes this. They like for the interviewer to throw barbs in and try to get out something nastier. They don't want the person just to move along. They want the public excitement demands the interviewer to tear into the person somehow.
So you've got
to consider that in your when you're thinking about presenting this subject matter. Not that you're going to modify it to fit that form, but you've got to consider the fact that that's the publicly accepted concept. You just always have to keep that in mind and expect response to it in that direction.
I know there's that Phil Donahue thing. I listened a little bit, two or three times, and he gravitates in the general direction. You see, he'll bring in the women's lib and sort of standard that.
Oh well, he doesn't have. I liked him because he tries to hold a little bit more to the people and the subject matter than and tries to open it up a little bit. And he does it in a nice public way.
Yeah.
And he gets out there in that audience and stirs those people up and just grabs them, you know, and go ahead and say that. It's nice to watch him work. I mean, he's a direct person.
I haven't watched him in the audience.
Oh, he gets out there and he gets the people on there and even handles the people over the telephone like he was right next to him.
Yeah.
Personable. Yeah. Personable as hell. You know, right, just likable. So the last time I heard him, some girl was talking on the telephone, and all of a sudden you heard the phone drop, went crash. He says, "Well, I felt like doing that myself at times," and he just moves right on. Let it go. And he's got a really working mind.
Yeah.
And he gets so involved in it, he has to excuse himself once in a while.
Oh.
Yeah. No, none of these things you can't bring them up as to what you're talking about here. They're different institutions altogether, like Phil Donahue type presentation. That's a singular institution, and it's a little bit different from other type of interview shows. That there was one what the hell was that guy's name that died? Just a mean son of a bitch, and people loved to listen to him. And he'd try to get you to cry if he could. People liked it. He was an ex-Marine or something like that. Just nasty.
Well, this is sort of a country version of all that.
Well, I'd sure like, if it goes out, I'd like to see it. It, you know, the way you present and the way you handle things makes all the difference in the world. Now, I don't necessarily mean a lot of graphics or slickness or anything like that, but how you introduce it, paying a lot of attention to how it goes out, it's important.
Yeah.
This is just too damn delicate to just let crash out somewhere. It's a finer flavored food.
Well,
that's the way I look at it.
Yeah. But you see how it fits in.
Well, it fits in almost too well. I gave that damn Carol, this little thing I wrote, she wanted to know about other things other than talk, and I said, well, that wasn't the point. I said, you got where you were because you stayed to it, to inquiry. And I said, the ramifications are limitless, absolutely limitless. And that's when I started that little half-assed piece on economics and things of that nature. That this was just sort of pointing up how you could leave this world and talk and get into a lot of implications just from using this as a basis. As far as useful applications, in that sense, there are a whole lot of them. And it gives you a footing, a basis to stand on. You know, it's the same thing like using the Emersonian inquiry that you talk about or something to get into subject matter. Well, hell, you use the talk process to get into economics. And I swear to God it'll shed a different light on it. An absolutely different light.
Absolutely. What's the dual? If a question's too direct, what it does is it distorts the experience. It invalidates it. It may make entertainment, but it doesn't get to the experience. Any strong statement is the world distorting. So you start off, you work into something. But anyhow, you like you say, you got all the variations.
I've got to go. I'll bring that. The introduction on Studs Terkel's book is worth reading, and that's short.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you don't want to read all the things.
How would we get to? I forget the man's name.
David Flagg.
David Flagg. How would
I'm
we
gonna call him up?
How
one
would
thing.
We get to him?
Well, first of all, it'd be almost impossible if he doesn't decide to move up here. See, he's got a job opportunity up here, which means that he takes about a 50% cut in salary.
Yeah.
And he's still moneyed enough to not exactly want to do that right off. I mean, just like that without really considering it. And see, what he'll get is a lot less salary, but he'll get a percentage of the business, which could mean a hell of a lot of money after they get going. And but anyhow, if he accepts that he's up here, then we can talk to him further. See, he's interesting in that he still holds on to the money concept.
Yeah.
And he still holds on to the, for instance, like I sort of mentioned, living in Micanopy, and he himself just right off sort of felt like maybe in his new job that wasn't the place for him to live. See, he's PR conscious.
Yeah.
So he's got to be establishment in order to maintain respectability because he fronts for this organization.
Yeah.
Micanopy wouldn't be the place for him to live. Well, that's just being damn sensible.
Yeah.
Just plain damn sensible.
Well, now
he doesn't make any excuse about it.
Good. How long would it take him, say, to just look at two or three of these little things that we have here and then just get the notion of it? Could he do it? He couldn't do it in an hour. That's a little too short. Take a couple hours. Take half a day.
Yeah.
It wouldn't take a whole half a day.
Well, he's got a couple of things going for him. And
he knows journalism.
He knows journalism, and he independently, out of the blue, turned on that tape recorder with that man, that black man I was talking about.
Yeah.
And he said he wouldn't take the world for that tape.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know what he wants to do with it. He just likes it. Now, there's value. I mean, he didn't say it was any value other than him that he liked the damn thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be very encouraging. And if he could see this particular approach, I'd be willing to wager if he understood it and opted to do it, that he could be start into working what you're talking about almost momentarily.
Yeah.
Because he's not clouded with pretentious writing.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's accustomed to serviceable writing.
Yeah.
But evidently, he owned up to the fact that evidently he didn't exactly put out the right words. He said because he wrote a whole program for the state of Florida or something like that, and then somebody else took it, just rewrote it a little bit, another firm, yet rewrote it a little bit and charged them hundreds of thousands of dollars for the same thing, and they just took it directly from him. So that's encouraging if he's not on the top of the list of that kind of writing. But his mind is
changing. I just borrowed that. I don't have a copy of that, do I?
That was in New Times magazine.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember it was right impressive what he did.
Mm-hmm.
I read those at your house, maybe. Yeah. But
I like the man's attitude best of all. Good attitude.
Yeah.
And we could work a little, we could work that book over in regards to talk. Quite handily, because he, see, there's a friend of my brother has a friend that's frenetically trying to write a book on alternative working methods or something of this nature, new job opportunities, a job dissatisfaction, and he's a psychologist, and he's full of questionnaires and full of bullshit and all this kind of stuff, and this is all up in the air, you know, the whole time about dissatisfaction with jobs and whatnot like that. Turkle goes out and does what's on the surface is an absolutely absurdly simple thing. He just says, what do you think of your job? And he finds out.
That's the man tell him.
Right. And then just transcribe the damn thing. He doesn't set up questionnaires and multiple choice test, see what your mother was, what the color of your hair is, whether or not you like beer or water. It's that kind of stuff that it'd be a valuable adjunct to put in this package here, but just to study for it.
I think of course, you got all the variations of what this would be, but I think you're in my mind, the thing that sort of keeps me on the track of the you see the approaches you have now, journalism, creative writing, and you see then you go one step farther to that article I read on Hawthorne, you see, on the validity of his experience and his skill in using it. Now those two things will carry a long ways, Wade. And you see, the journalist there's nothing at all in his training to show him at all anything about what he sees. They don't test that at all.
Now, even though it was boring as hell, maybe you should have taken Phil Donahue's show on the Watergate guys.
Yeah.
I didn't get to watch it all, but did you see any part of one? You had two guys up there. Well, those were the two journalists that broke the Watergate case.
Oh.
Now, see, I can't make a damn thing of it right now, talking about it, but just recollect, because you were talking about that approach, and here you had these two men up there trying to explain how they got into it, what they did, their whole process, their feelings about it.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty devoid of what you
were
saying, really.
Yeah, that's right.
They're journalists.
They can't look at it.
It was one neat thing. There's two of them.
I see. Those two fellas.
Yeah, one of them saw long hair and
Washington newspaper.
Right, Washington Post. And there was one that was a college graduate, and the one that hadn't been to school. And he was called openly the hippie or something, and he had longer hair. And they'd sat there, and he said, well, this, the guy says, well, I'm the college graduate, but I can't write, and he can write. And, you know, it was just, that was a nicety.
Yeah.
And just, at least here was two equal guys, you know, that talents came out.
I think now that's what enabled me to get into this Long Beach story. You see, looking at it to see what the boy could see, the material that he's trying to look at. And then his skill in handling it. Those are the two basic things. I think that's been sort of basic in my mind since I read that article on Hawthorne. It's right basic. Because then you go through that and you see, you're not looking for the stylistic things or what they teach in journalism. You see a good bit there, and the middle part of it, he's actually handling individuals. Now, you're going to get off the track because you know the individuals much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's unfair for me to look at that.
Yeah, it's unfair. You'd have to watch yourself. But
I'm also opinionated.
Yeah, that shows him. Though, right, ambitious for a journalist.
Well, maybe we ought to contact him. Maybe I'll call him up. See if he's still around or something.
That'd be something to go on and get him down there and we could talk to him. Yes.
We could talk to him just about this. And if
you got the copy over there.
Yeah, if he buys it, he's in. Just go back through what we said. Just say, if he was sitting over here,
yeah,
and you and I went back through it again,
yeah,
and I say, well, damn it all, he's been stylistic.
Yeah.
Well, he's doing this.
And let him put on something and without any respect to the newspaper. Just what he had found.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
He absorbed a tremendous amount of stuff there. Maybe the greatest sin was that he tried to put it all into that one article.
That could be.
Tried to tie it all together, and it's way
be.
Too much.
Yeah. But I'm trying to stick it in your mind now about the thing, about that thing you look for. You see, is his capacity for looking, for seeing, and then his manner of handling it, and they make a pretty big difference. Now, what you say about Stud Strickel? You see, I would hold all that. I take a position of doubt on that. I'd have to listen to a policeman a little bit before I would go along with him that is a natural form for anything. To me, it looks arbitrary, artificial. Looks like he's tidied it up. Now, you see, here's the one thing I've got into out here is that talk is never represented in print. You see, if Miss Mary uses a native language, they'll translate it into the school language.
Mm-hmm.
And then you never have her voice.
I laid out that question when he's talking to the block mason, the brick stone mason.
Yeah.
Was that him? No, it was a steel worker, I think. Steel worker. He wanted his kid to be an effete snob, was the term that he used. And that steel worker
could be.
Well, he'd been very interesting. Well, hell, he read all the time. The steel worker did.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He gets some of these people who read.
Hell, he said, you know, he'd have a pocketbook in his pocket. at work, and people would make fun of him. And he talked about, did he, you mention Emerson, but, you know, he rattled off a few literary people and referred to them. This is the steel worker. And he's uneducated, and he's out there, by God, working for his, so through his kid, he'll be made manifest, you might say.
Yeah.
Through his kid.
Well.
There you go.
Yeah.
Colleges are packed with them in this generation.
Yeah. That's right.
That's where your quality's gone to.
But most of them,
these people have been pushed into college to satisfy the needs of the parents.
Yes. And what they pick up from their parents is, the first thing they ask is wages and hours.
Right.
How much you going to pay and how long it takes to do it.
Now, dropouts today seem to be coming from that world of the educated. It's gone back around. Like the kids that are dropping out of school, their parents... have the degrees and the jobs.
Yeah.
You know, they're the ones that are dropping out.
Yeah.
Well, my daughter dropped out. And her mother's got a master's degree. And I suppose, and her stepfather's got a master's degree. She can leave me out of the subject.
Yeah. She. That's right. And she didn't show any liking at all for that. That choice little college that her mother sent her to.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the garden spots, that little place. Mm. What was the name of it? Beloit or something? I don't know.
Be something.
Doesn't matter. Yes. That's right. And she didn't, that was no skin off her back. That isn't. Shedding
the
tears about it.
Yeah, she can handle that stuff, you know, mentally. School is not a burden to her.
Is that right? So it doesn't matter to her where she goes.
Mm-hmm. Her mother could do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Technically speaking, she didn't have a brain in her head. Just go out and make an A.
Yeah.
And here I'd go to school and come struggling home and just kill me.
Well, you see, that's what I see about these flatheads. You see, you take a person like that, she cannot camouflage it. But any time she sits down and starts listening, you just see a perfect A student. You know that any course she takes, she'll make an A or A plus in. And furthermore, that it is inhuman to stand between them and courses. Now, see, I indoctrinated her against courses, and I think it's probably a bad office. But since I've been trying to make amends, I've been speaking favorably of courses.
Now, Julie is the only one I've run into, and that was the most beautiful statement I've heard in years, that she was embarrassed to go to school. It was too easy. She said, I got so it's just embarrassing to me. I just go there and don't do anything, make A's. So she's looking around different corners. Hell, she could probably take 40 hours. You know, she's put her head to it. Especially this place like Santa Fe.
Yeah.
All she'd have to do is sign up for the courses, more than likely.
Yeah.
She said, that's just embarrassing.
Yeah. When's she coming back?
Oh, she's back. She's starting to work Monday.
Oh,
she's
she?
Had her... She's obstinate, cuss.
Yeah.
She's obstinate. And but that also means if she decides she's going to do something, she's not going to... dally too much with it.
Yeah.
That's one of the things about working around here. That,
well, you think we ought to pick up a little typewriter for her to use?
Oh, I've got typewriters.
I know, but
she's
she
got one.
Herself.
Yeah. She's got Mimi's typewriter over there.
Is she?
Yeah.
Well.
And She'll be getting on to it pretty quick. Matter of fact, I talked to her about an hour yesterday about the subject.
You think you'd hire out to me for a morning or two a week, and I'll get a copy of some stuff from you?
Okay. She says, hell, I'll do it for free. It's got a glorious attitude, you know, like she, when I offered to hire myself, she didn't say anything for a long time because she didn't feel like it was right to work for me for money. Anyway, don't run into that attitude too frequently.
Now, she stopped down there.
In Orlando?
At the hamburger place, pizza place.
Yeah. The donut place. Yeah, she just couldn't handle that anymore. But she
just had had enough of that, of her boss.
Yeah, he wore her down. He was a strange mentality. She had a whole long story on him.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Well, now you see, look at that. See, it's just, that's what I say about Carl. He sees things like that. He can't put them down. But see, she's young enough, she could let her do it. And that story on that fella, you see, is all gone. Suppose I didn't have that thing about Zane's Bramble Ball. It'd be lost, just gone into the air. See, I've even got the story and I got a commentary on it.